AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Infrastructure bills, the crisis at the border, the COVID Delta variant. Each of those three issues has dominated headlines in 2021. But right now, it's all about Afghanistan and the response from the Biden administration. It's a free-for-all, so we'll tackle them all.
Live from the apex of the week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Davis Michelson. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Laurie.
Did that feel just a little weird?
It felt good.
Did
felt
it?
Really good. Felt good.
Welcome to the free-for-all, Davis Michelson.
Absolutely, sir.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Here, How's your morning going?
Very well. Very well. It's been a very productive week. You know, I've managed my time very carefully this week. Lots to do.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, the idea is you sort of hit Friday and then you play cleanup for the day.
Right.
You know,
a
little tweak this a little bit, tighten that up a little bit, proofread this, you know, that's where I'm at.
Good,
I feel good. Feel real good. How about you?
Well, you know, with everything that's going on out there in the world, I hate to even mention it, but I think I've got to. I mean, it's a classic first world problem. I hit the switch on my coffee maker this morning and nothing happened.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, I know it. It's my own little crisis.
So are you decaffeinated right now?
I am not. I mean, I went the cowboy route.
All right. Explain.
You just boil up some water. You throw some grounds in there. You let it make coffee. And then you
very carefully
drain it out.
Uh-huh.
After you sort of drink it
through your teeth as a strainer?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You got to have a toothpick, Andy.
Awesome.
Good grief. Isn't that something that's what we've got to worry about when we've got other issues that are just, you know, they're top of mind? I heard Big Apple Joe say that the flags are being flown at half-mast at federal buildings, as they should be. We are going to talk about the terrible happenings in Afghanistan and where it might lead us from here, what the next steps might be. Could there be an impact on the markets? Could there be an impact on the infrastructure bills? There's lots of things to consider here. So
We're easing into it. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Let's go ahead and get started. What you got?
Well, Chip, according to the National Weather Service, the potential for flash flooding and severe weather continues across the portions of the northern plains and Midwest. Heavy rain and flooding are possible for the mid-Atlantic region today as uncomfortable and potentially dangerous heat continues throughout much of the central and eastern United States, as well as the desert southwest. Let's keep our eyes on the skies, Chip.
Yeah, absolutely. The in the Midwest, about the only weather warning that I'm seeing right now is we've got some flash flood concerns, obviously, and there's a severe thunderstorm warning that is in, I'll call it south central Wisconsin. So just be aware.
And here's this: 13 U.S. service members killed Thursday, 18 more wounded in an Islamic State terrorist attack outside the airport in Kabul, Afghanistan, according to the Pentagon. That marks the deadliest day for the U.S. military in Afghanistan since August 2011. In a response, Biden directed military officials to develop plans to respond. Marine General Kenneth F. McKenzie, Jr., Chief of U.S. Central Command, attributed the attack to the Islamic State Khorasan, which claimed responsibility Thursday. Now, Chip, that group is not affiliated with the Taliban, stoking concerns the country could again turn into a proving ground for terror. President Biden said U.S. airlift efforts would move forward after the deadly attack on the airport. While the situation on the ground remained volatile, Biden said, quote, "We will not be deterred by terrorists." Chip,
yeah,
lots to unpack.
This is obviously going to be a topic of discussion during the free-for-all, but it seems so weird to be talking about working with the Taliban. But the Taliban was said that they had control of the perimeter of that airport, and obviously they didn't. So we need to take a closer look at just exactly what's happening there.
EPA has sent their proposed renewable fuel standards to the Office of Management and Budget for review, and it is not on the agency's internet site. The levels will spell out the renewable volume obligations for 21 and 22. According to a Reuters report, EPA has also proposed a retroactive decrease in the 2020 RFS levels in its recommendations to OMB. That's a move that apparently reflects the impacts of greatly reduced fuel demand from the pandemic. EPA did not confirm that report, however. By law, Chip, EPA is to finalize those RFS levels for the coming year by November 30.
Right, right. And we will definitely be talking about this. But that November 30 deadline is for 2022, not for 2021. Mm-hmm. And we still don't have the final numbers on 2021.
Well, Republicans on the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee want the Biden administration to provide a 60-day extension to allow for more public comments and meetings on the rewrite defining the waters of the United States regulations. Ranking Member Sam Graves and others yesterday said in a letter, quote, "The decision to host meetings within such a short time frame on a wide range of topics is indicative of a rushed, insincere notice and comment process by this administration." And finally, Chip, USDA is preparing a foreign animal disease protection zone around Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands to prevent the spread of African swine fever to the U.S. mainland. That's in case the disease jumps to the islands from the Dominican Republic. USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service is offering technical support to the Dominican Republic to assist in its response to the disease and has offered the same to neighboring Haiti. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's get the latest on ASF from Jennifer Shike. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Pork, porkbusiness.com. Jennifer, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're doing okay. You've been focused, obviously, on ASF and the efforts to keep it out of the country. What's the status?
Well, you know, it's been a really been a great thing yesterday that we're making this step forward and that USDA is trying to help preserve the continuity of our U.S. pork exports. So we're really hopeful that OIE will accept this and we'll be able to create this protection zone to just allow us to be able to continue exporting pork throughout the world, even if it would spread in that in those island areas. So, yeah. You know, ASF is not in the U.S. You know, we've done a lot of great things over the years to try to keep ASF out. You know, we found that mitigations are working, but, you know, it really comes down to producers being that final brick in the wall of protecting their herd and doing everything they can from a biosecurity standpoint to keep the disease out. Because even if it gets in the U.S. somehow, it doesn't get into pigs unless we get it into our barns.
Right. Yeah. Even if it shows up here, you need to double down on your biosecurity and make sure that you do not allow it into one of your barns. Because it's not like it travels airborne, right?
Correct. And, you know, at least, you know, from what we know, it doesn't.
Right.
And
right.
Internationally, like, you know, I think that's the big thing. Like, we are just such a global industry that we really have to take a hard look at any international touch points that our farm has. So maybe that's feed, maybe that's employees, maybe it's an employee's family member who's traveled internationally, but we need to make sure that we're following all those protocols on the farm, particularly with paying attention to international contacts right now.
Fantastic counsel right there, Jennifer. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, thank you.
You bet. Right. That's Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal's Pork, porkbusiness.com. We got the free-for-all coming up next. Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Michelson right here on AgriTalk. Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin. The concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD-TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD-TV.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Yetter Farm Equipment, profitable solutions for production ag since 1930. Visit yetterco.com to check out their combine roller attachment, the Stalk Devastator.
All right, welcome back. Speaking of equipment, if you are headed to the Farm Progress Show, be sure to stop by and say hello to Machinery Pete. Greg is going to be at the New Holland booth from 1 to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, September 1st. Machinery Pete, New Holland booth, 1 to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, September 1st. Be sure to stop by and say hello. It is Friday. It's a free-for-all. I'm Chip. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, with us. Jim?
I'm here.
All right. We'll get right back to you here in just a moment. Sure. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio.
Great to be here, Chip. After all the discussion about canola yesterday, I'm ready to talk about lentils and chickpeas. We're on that track today, right?
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Hey, buddy, thanks so much for the help the past few weeks.
Oh, I hope I did the show well. It was a lot of fun. It was great, and thanks for asking.
All right. All right. And Davis Michelson,
yes,
editor of Landowner Newsletter, and
right.
Handsome newsman right here on AgriTalk.
That's right.
Welcome
That's
to
right.
the free-for-all.
I'm so happy to be here. I've got so much to say.
I know you do.
Yeah.
I know you do. I'm sorry, but we're going to go over to Wiesmeyer first and get his take on what's
best.
Going on.
Probably best.
Jim, you know where we're going first, Afghanistan and the happenings there. 13 military personnel were killed yesterday. What was it, 18 more wounded?
At least.
Yeah, at least the Afghans killed in the two bomb explosions. More than 60 is what we understand. It was a pretty dark day yesterday.
Yeah, more than 95 Afghans now.
Okay.
So, as is usual, the fatalities increased, Chip, on this one. But
yeah.
Bottom line, it was a disaster.
Right. Okay. Let's go to the reaction. When the reaction started yesterday from President Biden, I was concerned when he started. He started weak. He picked up momentum. He gained some strength. He came through with a message that the U.S. is not going to get pushed around. But I don't know if the rest of the country is seeing it that way, Jim.
Yeah, most Americans, and we've learned from different presidents, this is not a political analysis here. You fight strength with strength, and we don't have strength right now. The country is being seen as weak, and I hate that. And I thought he did get emotional. He did have some strong moments as far as coming back. But when he tried to lay blame on Trump, I just thought he missed it. And because you can go back to 2017 where Trump nailed it. At 2017, Chip, he said, and there's audio, that consequences of a rapid exit are both predictable and unacceptable. And hasty withdrawal would create a vacuum for terrorists, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So the biggest thing I think is he's getting flack from both Republicans and Democrats and some key Democrats. But two things, bottom line, Chip. Why did the CIA bring, if not all or most of all their people back several months ago? So Biden said the State Department, the Defense Department, and intelligence all agreed. I have people saying they just can't believe that. He should have established exit routes and not given up on Bagram Air Base. Why? That is close to the American embassy. The State Department Secretary, Antony Blinken, is eventually going to have to resign. That's what happened after the Bay of Pigs with the Kennedy administration. He put the State Department people in harm's way by signing off on giving up on Bagram Air Base, and that's a shame.
Yeah. And my concern with this is if the American people are disappointed with this, that's too soft a word. If we're seeing weakness here in this administration, certainly our enemies are as well. And the last thing we want to do is open the door to those who wish to do us harm, to empower those who wish to do this nation harm.
Yes.
Right.
Well, yeah,
right.
And Trump, he did say that, Jim, but he also said that ISIS was defeated, which also is clearly not true. But look at the Hill, I think it was the Hill Times, or no, sorry, the USA Today said that Biden's approval rating down to 41%. That has to get the White House's attention, as they don't look very good going into the midterms already in the House. The exit versus, you know, the decision to leave is being so meshed together with the withdrawal. And right. You know, I think it's the last number is 80% of Americans believe that they should be, you know, the U.S. should be leaving Afghanistan. This withdrawal is so mishandled.
Yeah.
And what's really gets my attention is the idea that, well, we have to leave by the 31st because the Taliban wants us to.
Yeah.
That is just
a different.
Are they
calling the shots?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't get that narrative.
Two things, yeah. Sean. When Trump said Al-Qaeda was defeated while he was president, and you have to keep them at bay, that means a show of strength. You saw even Biden admitted yesterday that not one American was killed since Trump, you know, worked that agreement. Yep. Second one, politically, you look at the independents. If his approval is only 41, it's, you know, 41%, it's much lower among the very critical independent voters. That's why they're nervous.
Well, and now that U.S. soldiers have died, the stakes change. And we heard Leon Panetta, Secretary of Defense and CIA Director under Obama, say, we're going to have to go back to get ISIS. Bottom line is that our work is not done in Afghanistan. So there's some very important decisions to be made here in the next, hours, days, in a very short order.
You know, one of the things that we need to keep in mind here is that the U.S. was exiting Afghanistan, and ISIS-K, what I wish I had a better understanding of what it was or what it is, and ISIS-K decided to do this, and they brought the war back to us. It's not we can pull out, but the war, that doesn't end the war. If we exit Afghanistan, they will continue to bring the fight to America, and we're either going to have to fight them in Afghanistan, or we're going to have to fight them in America
and continue to fight, Chip.
Yes,
the best way to explain ISIS-K, it's like the Delta variant. You know, they spin off and they become even more dastardly. That's the best way I can explain it.
These Afghans that assisted the U.S. being left on the ground, potentially, mm-hmm. whether it's 100,000 or it's 250,000. And I've heard some people say, well, hey, you know what? Too bad, we got to get out of there. These people assisted you, leaving them there. You're essentially almost setting them on a path to death. That's what's the really, really disheartening here.
Yes,
that's the humanitarian crisis. But once again, several presidents, Democrats and Republicans, did not learn you can't change a country that bases itself on religion. Mm-hmm. And you can't do it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't learn that under Republican and Democratic administrations.
Okay, guys, Jim, where do you think this goes from here? And let's bring it around to markets. Do you see a risk to the markets coming from what's happening in Afghanistan?
Well, you know, markets abhor uncertainty. And if this thing leads to even more questions, we don't know. I don't know the answer to that yet, because as Sean said, what signal are Davis that this thing, you know, signals to China and Russia? Mm-hmm. Will China make a grab on Taiwan? Will Putin do what he usually does, is mix up things, you know? Yeah. So it's unknown, Chip. But right now, they're not focusing on this. But this could delay congressional focus on things in the month of September. You talk about a big agenda that Congress has to do in September, appropriations bill, the debt limit, all these infrastructure bills, et cetera, where if this continues, it can get out of hand awfully fast.
Well, and to me, it's also conspicuous if we've got China that's made, and I don't know, Jim, maybe you can confirm or deny this, China talking Belt and Road through Afghanistan, but then we've also got the rare earth minerals cache there in Afghanistan as well. That seems a little spooky to me as well.
Yeah, but I don't think China's going to make the mistake that Russia and then the U.S. did from, you know, physically going in and into Afghanistan. History is very clear. You don't do that.
We'll We'll do it better. It'll be different this time. It's us. China. We'll do it different.
China's smarter.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of Jim nailed it on the potential market impact here. It's the uncertainty of it all, and we need to keep a close eye on how this will impact the energy markets first, because that can have a ripple effect into the ag markets. Consumer confidence, we also have to watch that. If all of a sudden a suicide bombing in Afghanistan turns into some sort of an attack on American soil, that can really hurt consumer confidence, and that hurts the markets.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, we've got some pressure in the soy complex. What's going on there?
Well, rains continue to fall across areas of the Midwest, and the anticipation that that'll help out those later maturing soybeans, and so that's putting the pressure on the market. Trade's ignoring a daily sale to China. I think some of that was, it was probably done last Friday, in all honesty, on the big price break, and just a matter of time here before it gets pushed through to USDA and then reported via the daily sales.
Right, yeah, that was 129,000 metric tons of beans to China. We also had 150,000 metric tons of corn sold to Colombia. Colombia showed up a couple of times this week.
Right, and Mexico. So, and unknown was a buyer of soybeans as well. So what we're seeing is that price breaks attract foreign buying, and I think that'll continue to underpin the market, but not helping us out here to close out the week.
Yeah, mixed trade in the wheat.
Yeah, not a lot going on, honestly, in the wheat. It's just kind of been a back and forth week of trade, and not a whole lot of fresh news on any of the wheat front, and it's kind of just lacking trade.
Right. Okay. I like this move that we got going in hogs today.
Yeah, a big move up there. So finish out the week on a strong note, it appears anyway. If we can hold this for another couple hours. Unfortunately, that isn't having any impact on the live cattle market. Continues to pull back there. So we had the big breakout to the upside on Monday. It looks like a head fake there, and we've pulled back since.
Yeah, that pullback from the new contract highs that we posted on Monday is a bit concerning. Thanks, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
It's a free-for-all. Be part of the conversation. Jump in here. You can do it on Twitter. Just use hashtag AgriTalk in your message. That way I'll be sure to see it. And give us a call. Why not? Well, you know what? Let's wait for that phone system to get back up and running the way that we want it to be. All right? But you can still make contact with us on Twitter. Hashtag AgriTalk in the message.
Call but don't call. This is what
call
you're saying?
Call but don't call.
That's what you're putting out there?
Yeah. You can also send an email, host@agritalk.com. Okay. I love your emails. Send them away. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Very good.
All right. We got the free-for-all going. It's me. It is Davis Michelson. It's Jim Wiesmeyer. And it's Sean Haney. We spent the last segment talking about what's going on in Afghanistan, and I think we wrapped up that part of the conversation. But I feel like we need to move to another macro issue here, guys, and that is a surge of COVID Delta variant around the country. Jim, I know that you're watching it closely. I mean, are we going to see some of the actions that we saw 18 months ago?
I don't think that's significant, but it is cause for concern, Chip. Yeah. And I think that the easiest way to explain this is why the Federal Reserve did not physically hold their meeting in Kansas City. They held it virtually. And this is probably why, even though the markets are up from what Powell commented on, the Powell's going to take a cautious view until they know that this Delta variant has peaked, and it looks like it will in about a month or so.
Okay. Haney, situation up north?
Same kind of concerns about the Delta variant and concerns that restrictions get placed back on as kids go back to school, universities come back, kids' sports really under threat. I think one of the pieces that does I was talking to a nurse last – actually, I had supper with a nurse last night, my wife and I, and she talked about how, you know, one of the things that concerns her is the age of some of the people that are being hospitalized due to the Delta variant. That is a eye-opener. It's not people that are 80. It is people under 50. Encouragement on both sides of the border for people to get vaccinated, but we really have plateaued in that department.
Right. Earlier this week, we talked with Bashar Shuker, who is the vaccination coordinator for the White House, and we were focused on the FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine. And we talked, you know, one of the questions that I asked him was, well, did FDA really have a choice? The Pfizer vaccine has been administered to millions. What are you going to do now? Say, we can't really approve that. Kind of a situation there. The question that I'm getting from many producers that are concerned about this is, does FDA approval clear the way for a vaccination mandate, Jim?
It gives businesses and certain government entities cover, if you will, our logic to mandate it, Chip. Mm-hmm. And I think a growing number of businesses are mandating vaccines. And as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I'm in favor of that. Another point, Chip, is they came out this week and went from 8 months to 6 months when you can take your booster shots. That tells you something right there.
Yeah. Jim's 100% correct. Look at what Delta Airlines did this week. They took it to a whole nother level, not just mandating, but also because of health insurance reason and extra costs. If you haven't been vaccinated, they're going to start pulling money off of your check. So that, you know, I just think courts, when I hear this, you know, this is going to kind of be figured out. But Jim's right. Green light for companies now to go. They're going to go with the mandate way.
You know, from a company standpoint, I mean, obviously they can make their decisions. But if we would go with a governmental mandate of the vaccine, that gets into some area that Jim, you and I are probably going to disagree on this one. That to me is something that you should not, cannot mandate.
Well, I mean, from a state, I don't want federal government mandating. I think each state, you know, can do it.
Okay. But Davis, Chip, you're being awful quiet.
Yeah. I don't like the idea of a mandate, but maybe I can understand, you know, like Sean brought up the airlines and stuff. Okay. Maybe we're in an enclosed space. We got a bunch of strangers in and out here. Okay. I get that. But if a company is able to extend the option of maybe, you know, isolation or, you know, we've got so many offices closed. That was the big news for the longest time there. Well, everybody's working from home and it's working out fine for a lot of people, to mandate vaccines in that scenario. I think maybe goes too far.
Yeah. Haney, you were going to jump in.
Well, we had, you know, a few soldiers, U.S. soldiers killed in Afghanistan, as we talked about in the prior segment. Yesterday, we're talking about how the U.S. needs to take action and do all these kinds of things. Yesterday in the U.S., 2,210 people died due to COVID. That was yesterday. Yep. Right? Yep. And so that's what's creating a lot of this narrative. I don't like the government mandating, honestly, at all, but I can see why companies are doing it.
Okay. Well, especially when Delta says that those unvaccinated is costing $50,000 per person. You know, that's business bottom line.
Yeah, if they are hospitalized, is a big number. So there is a potential market impact. And there's no surprise to that based on the kind of reaction and the disruptions that we saw to demand over the last 18 months. The concern that I've got over this is that we take our eye off the ball and all of the sudden we get into a situation where we are starting to disrupt the either the processing or the demand or one or another, because boy, our beef demand, our pork demand is so solid right now. We've got two markets that, well, the cattle market in particular, I think is primed for, we're already at 7-year highs in this cattle market. I would think that based on the numbers that are coming in, as long as we don't see a disruption to the demand side, we've got additional upside potential in this market. The hog side of things, you know, it's been kind of a difficult market to watch at times, but there's no denying the fact that we've got $85, $86 plus, well, for the October, but the December is over $80. That usually doesn't happen, guys. We usually don't see that strong of a hog market into the winter. So I think those two markets are vulnerable to if the Delta variant would create some of these disruptions again, right?
Well, and even if it doesn't, because I think what you're probably alluding to there is restaurant demand primarily.
Yeah, yeah.
What you and I have talked about this before, that what last year did was kind of, it was scary. People didn't like it. It was uncomfortable, but people did learn, hey, maybe it's not so bad if I spend a little more time at home, maybe go out a little bit less, maybe cook a little bit more at home. I think that there is risk to the restaurant industry, even if we don't, you know, call that red line. Well, you're locked down now. Restaurants are closed. No more taverns. No more, you know, no more dine-in type stuff. I think even without that, there's still a risk that more people are just going to stay home.
Right.
Chip, I think what Glenn Ring taught us years ago, the market is screaming at us on the hog market. There's a lot to maybe a lot fewer hogs out there as a result of PERS and other things. We're going to see that in the months ahead.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question. And the idea for this question comes from Nick off of Facebook. If a company mandates, and I'm going to send it to you, Jim. If a company mandates that you get vaccinated to come back to work and keep your paycheck, should they then be liable if you have a bad reaction to the vaccine?
Fair point. Could be. But I think it's a risk worth taking.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't, you know, my family emailed me right away and has said, you know, what about, you know, mandating you to get thin if you're fat? Now, you know, I draw the line there.
We both do, buddy. We both do.
You did get a Peloton, Jim, though. Come on.
I'm using it, too. And it's keeping me from not getting fatter.
You've always got to consult with your doctor on this, obviously. Have that conversation with your doctor. We're not going to sit here and act like we're experts, but we are going to sit here and talk about the issues that are coming up. And the reactions to vaccines, I would categorize them as rare, but when they happen, they can be significant. Yeah. There was a host in over in England in that had a terrible reaction, is what I understand. She was a host of the BBC, and so that is a highly publicized bad reaction to the vaccine, and it is something that needs to be remembered.
One wonders if within a benefits package through an employer, if a disability or short-term disability clause may or may not cover that. I don't know. Right. I'm just thinking out loud now.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, we've got a little bit more ground to cover. Yeah, when we come back, a couple of governmental issues. Let's talk about the infrastructure bills, where we're headed next on that social infrastructure bill. There's still a lot of, you know, it's got the huge price tag on it. We need to talk about that. And there's some updates on WOTUS that I want to get from Wiesmeyer. We've got the free-for-all with Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer, Davis Michelson from AgriTalk, and Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. We'll be right back in a moment.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert, featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD TV.
All right, let's wrap up the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Davis Michelson. Jim, I want to get to the infrastructure bill, but is there anything in your policy update that you filed this morning that you really feel like we need to bring it up? You know, there's one of the things. We don't have an ag trade rep at USDA yet, do we?
Not yet, but although we're doing pretty good on China. You remember all those naysayers, Chip, on that phase one agreement? Well, now they're going to meet it, if not exceed it, for the second year of that phase one. And USDA also changed the definition of trade. I think that's important because now we're going to get a lot more ethanol information because that's in the trade lingo now, Chip. Other one you mentioned, WOTUS, real quick. It'll be later rather than sooner because Republicans on the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee wants the Biden administration to provide a 60-day extension to the comment period, and they will do that. So we're going to have to wait longer.
Okay, hey, good.
Chip, speaking of appointees, Washington Post has a great tracker of how Biden's making out with his appointees. He only has 127 appointees confirmed. At this point in the administration, that's barely ahead of Trump, who is at 116. And Trump and Biden drastically behind Obama and Bush. Obama had 293, so pretty like over double at this point in time. So Biden's got some work to do.
Yeah. Yeah, he certainly does. Haney, I got to ask you. You really appreciated a conversation that we had on AgriTalk yesterday.
I tune in also like, when I come back, we're talking about canola. I'm like, what is going on? But hey, awesome. Like renewable diesel, canola definitely does play a role there. Hopefully USDA moves on that decision in terms of it being a feedstock for it. In terms of your double crop scenario, one of the big concerns, okay, so a couple of agronomic things here. White mold. So both canola and soybeans, Scarlatina is an issue. So that would be a concern. The other one is what crop goes before the winter canola that you would seed in like September?
Right.
That, so maybe people in Iowa might have to grow wheat too. This rotation's getting bigger and bigger. So
getting bigger and bigger. Yeah, we're looking for a third and we might get a fourth as far as the rotational crop with that.
But I think your comment about look at the amount of oil that we could produce per acre.
Yeah.
That was a really good comment. And the guest, he made at the very end of his interview when he said, China better be concerned. And that's the same thing we're saying in Canada with some of our canola exports. We're going to keep a lot of this canola at home and crush it domestically. And he was bang on.
And Jim, that's exactly why I wanted Haney to bring it up, because I wanted to get to that point. We talk about trade with China, and all of a sudden, we might be changing things up and domesticating our oilseed markets.
Yeah, I think this is going to be literally a growing issue, Chip, that's going to play right into positively the ag sector's contribution to climate change.
Wow. Fantastic. Davis, what'd you take away from that conversation?
It was interesting. You know, I think it might be a tough sell to get it going. We talked yesterday about, well, okay, do you grow a crop that maybe you're going to have a hard time marketing, or do you build, you know, plants to process crops that aren't being grown yet? To me, that's the conundrum that needs to be solved there.
The big thing that I am taking away from the renewable diesel conversations that we had this week on AgriTalk is this, and that is that the refiners are making an investment into crushing facilities to get feedstocks to make renewable diesel. You go all the way back to 2007 when people were saying to me, Chip, how serious do you think this ethanol thing is? Do you think it might stick around for a while? My attitude at that point was, well, as soon as Big Oil makes an investment in ethanol, then we'll know that it's for real. Here comes Valero. Now, they came in and bought a lot of stuff. You know, what, 20 cents, 25 cents on the dollar, even cheaper than that? But there was an investment in ethanol that led to the big boom. Jim, we're starting out with investment from Big Oil, the refiners, in this renewable diesel right out the gate.
Yes, it's clearly the strange bedfellows that we needed to together. Both the biofuel proponents and the refining industry have to get together to succeed in the future, and this is the first solid step, Chip.
Wow. Okay. All right. Haney, what else you got on your mind here, buddy?
I'm really kind of wondering about, I'm hearing from a lot of our listeners about, I'm going to market my crop differently in 2022. I got burned last fall. The market ran up. Marketing regret. And then in the drought zone, people not being able to deliver on some of the crop that they marketed because they got such a bad yield. I'm going to market differently. And I'm a little bit skeptical. And one of the differences in 22 is, does the market get a little bit toppy? It's easy to be in tight hands when the market's going up. If we do see a bit of a slide in some of the markets in 22, holding on could be a very regrettable strategy. So at this point, Chip, I'm a little bit skeptical on anything changing.
You know, we've had several conversations about 22 crop marketing. And, the toughest part about it is we always talk about you got to know your production costs. Once you know your production costs, then you can figure out how aggressive you can get on your marketing. Well, when people are taking Davis – when people are taking a look at those 22 production costs, they're trying to figure it out, and it's kind of hard to pin down right now.
It really is. It really is. I got a note that fertilizer prices at a 9-year high at this point. And it's tough to see whether or not there's a ceiling there, which to me suggests there may not be a ceiling established yet.
Exactly. Not yet.
Herbicide not prices, yet. Too.
Yes,
and who's to say, Chip, we're not going to have new highs if this weather is going to be as crazy in this fall as it has been during, some of the growing season.
Yes.
So the rain spigot may not shut off.
Right. We talked with Michael Clark from BAMWX on Monday, and we're seeing that reverse in the pattern in the dry areas are now wet. And I asked him very specifically, does that mean that it could stick around and give us a wet harvest? He said, unfortunately. I know it's rubbing salt in the wound, but unfortunately, that's what we might see.
Which gives you an opportunity to price 2022 crops.
Yeah, so let's keep an eye on the weather, and this energy market's going to keep an eye on the weather with Hurricane Ida over the weekend. You guys, fantastic job. Thank you so much. Jim Wiesmeyer, Davis Michelson, Sean Haney. You got to come back this afternoon. Conversation with Craig Turner from Turner's Take, right here on AgriTalk.